Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's an open forum for the next two segments, for the next 40 minutes. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go onto the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can post online as well at wosu.org/allsides. Do you want to talk about the weather? We can talk about the weather. I walked my dog in it this morning. Give us a call if you want to talk about the weather. If you'd like to talk about casinos, we can do that. We just heard that the arguments are delayed while the judges asked both sides, the city and Penn National Gaming, to talk about a possible settlement. What do you think about the holdup on the casino? Are you for it or against it? What do you think? And what do you think about the governor's efforts to solicit help from some gambling business experts to the tune of 12 or 13 or 14 or $15 million. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't mean to make too light of the weather, of course. 89 people have been confirmed killed from the tornado that hit Joplin, Missouri last night. 89 people, more are expected, more have gone unaccounted for. What is the deal with the weather? I was just reading this morning that the average nationwide in fatalities from tornadoes is usually around 40 or 50, maybe a 60 people a year, and now we have 89 at least in one fell swoop. Someone suggested it's that global warming again. What do you think? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So Penn National is supposed to prove two things in its case against the city as it moves through the courts. It has to prove that it has a reasonable chance of winning its lawsuit seeking permanent access to sewer and water service without annexing the site near I-270 and West Broad Street in Columbus. That, of course, is thanks to the Columbus Dispatch. And the other thing it must prove, that it will be irreparably harmed if it doesn't receive sewer and water service in the meantime. So 4 days has been set aside for the hearing. U.S. District Judge Gregory Frost is in charge of that. But he's asked both sides to take a break for an hour and see if they can reach a settlement. Usually that's a sign that there's possibly a settlement afoot. We'll see. We'll know possibly before the end of this hour. But if you want to talk about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My call screener, Jeff, thinks it's strange that there are no calls yet. Oop, here's one. Don't wait till the last minute. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I welcome you to check out our website at wosu.org/allsides. There were two slangs yesterday. Actually, it was probably on Saturday, but folks were gathering yesterday joining together in a plea to end the violence in a Near East Side neighborhood. Apparently, two gang members were killed in what appeared to be a drive-by shooting on Saturday afternoon, according to Bill Bush in the Columbus Dispatch. About 75 people gathered. They're holding hands in a picture. Neil Oran has photographed them. It's on page B3 of the Dispatch. Folks say there's just not enough help. They need more help. They need to stop the violence. 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What do you think about Senate Bill 5? Where I was at this weekend at Green on the Green in Worthington, there were lots of people out collecting signatures to get the repeal of Senate Bill 5 on the ballot in November. What do you think about that? Did you sign it? Have you signed it? Do you want to sign it? Do you not want to sign it? Do you oppose the repeal? Are you supportive of Senate Bill 5? In large part, it is intended to end collective bargaining as we know it for public employees, most public employees in the state of Ohio, including police and fire and teachers. 614-292-8513. Blake in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Anne. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I noticed that you say, when you're talking about Ohio State, you say Ohio State University, not the Ohio State University. And I thought maybe somebody might have mentioned this when you had your interview with Dr. Gee, but no one did. And as I heard the 7 o'clock airing of your show, I couldn't call in. So could you please speak to that and why you say you do not say the Ohio State University?
I guess I just never really thought about it before. And when I worked for the Columbus Dispatch, we didn't use the Ohio State University. So it's probably just habit. And Gordon Gee didn't say anything. So I'm not sure whether it's a rule, a law, or just a style issue. But it's not intended one way or the other. It's just not something that I, as a journalist, that I did for many years when I covered the, you know, whenever I referred to the Ohio State University in print.
Okay, because I know that's a big part of Ohio State's brand is the fact that the is a part of its actual name. So,
oh, okay.
I appreciate you taking my call.
Duly noted, Blake. Thanks for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye. Diane, you're on the air from Worthington. You want to talk about the weather?
I want to talk about my poor dog's paws that won't dry out. Annie and Teddy are just soaking wet at this point.
Yeah, it was walking in the rain along the river today.
Yeah, absolutely, as was I. So I don't know when we're going to get a break from rain, but I guess it's great for kayaking, so we should be thankful for that.
It'll be great for the water sports for the spring. If it ever stops raining, we can enjoy the water that it has generated. Thank you, Diane.
Thanks, Dan. Just wanted to call and say hi. Love you.
Remember, Diane, it's good for the complexion.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Thank you,
Anne. Bye. Bye. Jordan and Blacklick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Anne. First of all, thanks for taking my call, and I really enjoyed your show.
Thank you.
I was just wondering if you might consider doing a piece in the future, or maybe the near future, on Columbus's preparedness for a similar event that's happened now through Mississippi and Alabama and now Missouri. I think we've been incredibly fortunate. We've had some bad storms here, but nothing near like what these poor people in the Midwest are experiencing. And I just want to know, how prepared is the city of Columbus for a similar event? Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Jordan. You know, actually, we did talk about that last year, and ironically, this year has been so bad, and we haven't, although we've had Ben Gelber on to talk about the actual weather and how we're warned of it and that sort of a thing. What if Columbus, or say a town like, you know, Hilliard or Worthington or any suburb around Columbus was hit directly by a tornado like they have been in Joplin, Missouri, and also in Alabama. What would happen? How would we recoup? What would be the process? And where would we go for help? 614-292-8513. That's the number to call if you want to join us on the air for an open forum. And Phil in Delaware, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. Our company's been peripherally involved in research on horse racing for about 15 years now, so we're pretty familiar with that aspect of what's going on in Ohio. The only comment I have to make is the longer that Columbus and the governor dawdle on establishing the casinos and slots at the tracks, the worse it's going to be for the industry. And likewise, the more dollars are going to flow out of state. Pennsylvania this past year set all-time records for gambling, drawing considerable dollars from Maryland, New Jersey, and, of course, Ohio. And they have table games now, and we're still trying to figure out that the governor's just recently announced a 2-year study.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be about a 2-minute study. It's time to get rolling. That's my comment.
Phil, some folks are saying this is exactly that's what they want to do. They want to frustrate the gambling interests, Penn National Gaming, and frustrate them and force a shutdown of the whole operation. They don't want gambling in Columbus.
Well, that could be true, but certainly it's not going to do anything in terms of revenue for the state, which is all negative right now in terms of this gambling issue.
What do you think about ideas that the governor's trying to generate to get more revenue for the state from the gambling companies?
Well, he's changed the rules. They already had a contract. I know that in our business, we rarely were ever allowed to change a deal. Maybe the state of Ohio is different. But, I think a deal's a deal. And anyway, that's enough.
Okay. Thanks, Phil, for your call.
Okay.
What do you think out there? Do you think a deal's a deal and the state of Ohio and the city of Columbus ought to let this go through and let it happen as soon as possible, get those construction workers back on the sites, or what? 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Dave in Eastmore, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Ann.
Hi, Dave.
So I'm calling to inquire as to why reporters in Columbus always lump the east side together into one big area. The slaying happened on the east side or the
right.
near east side. There's so many actual neighborhoods on the east side, and there's never any specifics as to where these slayings happen. So it makes it feel like the entire east side is a big slum that all these murders happen on. You would never hear somebody say, a slaying happened on the north side, it'd be Clintonville or Victorian Village or, Westerville. So I'm wondering what's the disconnect there when there are so many great neighborhoods on the east side that aren't affected by these sort of things.
Well, I called it the Near East Side, and that's actually in capital letters in the dispatch. But again, it's not necessarily very descriptive. So point well taken. It's always difficult to do. One time, I referred to the south side as the south end, and I don't know if it was someone who called up or someone who wrote me an email after the show was very disappointed in that, and I understand that. It sounds like
right.
It's a pejorative, and point well taken, Dave. We'll do our best. I will say for the sake of your point that those shootings occurred along Mound Street at Bueller and Lily Alley.
Yes.
So,
I remember seeing that in the paper yesterday. So.
Yeah.
But, I just wanted to try and make a point because I do live on the east side. Eastmore itself is an outstanding neighborhood.
Right.
Higher income. We actually have a city council member that lives in the neighborhood. So,
right.
And we're on the east side. So, don't
it's a
forget
big
about
city.
It.
I won't. Thanks, Dave. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. We're going to be right back with our open forum. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Talk of the Nation provides you with the day's news and more, the experiences and opinions of people around the country and around the world. I'm Neil Conan. When you're looking for the latest news and how it affects you, your family, your neighbors, and your life, turn to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 65 degrees in downtown Columbus at 10:20 this morning. Showers and thunderstorms likely throughout the day. We could see a little bit of sunshine peek through the clouds as well and a high of 83 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms are likely tonight, a low of 64 degrees. More rain for Tuesday as well, a high of 77. And showers and thunderstorms Tuesday night, a low of 60 degrees. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're having an open forum now for the next 20 minutes or so. And then coming up after that, we'll be talking to President and CEO of Columbus Downtown Development Corporation, Guy Worley. So we'll be talking about the new Columbus Commons downtown later on. If you have any thoughts about that, we welcome those as well. Sue in Canton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Why, I was watching World Views last night, and they had a volcano erupt under the glacier, and they had smoke so high they stopped the airplanes from flying in the area.
Right. Well, you remember the volcanic eruption that stopped air traffic for weeks last year. I think it was from Finland as well.
Yeah.
It's headed.
That's weird to have the tornado over here and an eruption of a volcano over there.
Well, it's tornado season. And it was about this time, I'm not sure, maybe I can have someone check for me, that other volcano in Finland erupted, and it blocked the airspace for quite a long time, caused a big problem for the air traffic industry. But I don't know. Why do you say it's strange? It's not the end of the world.
Oh, I know
okay.
that. I know
We're
that.
All here today, by the way. Yay.
It's just like push and shove, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe. We'll see. See, what do you think it's something having to do with global warming? I mean, do you think there's something going on?
I think there's something going on in the inner part of the earth that's causing this.
Okay. I don't know. If anybody out there has any insights into that, please give us a call. And Sue, thanks for your call.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Thanks.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Don't wait. Give us a call now. Frank in Canal Winchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Anna. It's going to rain tomorrow, Sue.
It's just going to rain.
And I have in my hand an article written by David S. Broder.
Mm. The late David S. Broder, the late and great.
The late David S. Broder, which I have run off at my own expense, and I hand it out to friends and neighbors. And it's about gerrymandering.
Yeah.
Not spending is the worst factor affecting elections. And I'm looking for an advocate with some sway, and I think that is you to draw attention to this problem from time to time.
Well, now gerrymandering is where they fix the districts to benefit one party or the other, right?
Yes, and in this article, there's a quick four-line paragraph that I'd like to read real quick.
Okay.
Meantime, they have paid far less attention to what may be a larger problem, the way district lines are drawn to create safe havens for one party or the other, in effect denying voters any choice of representation.
So what's the problem with having safe districts? Sorry, did I interrupt you, Frank?
No. Then you get the extremes from both sides sending their representatives to Washington, and then everybody in the middle doesn't get represented. And also, just for your information, this is a June 26, 2008 article from the Washington Post that you or someone could look up to familiarize yourself, because obviously the late David Broder has written this article much more than I could explain. But that's the party. We don't get represented. The middle, the silent majority, doesn't get represented in Washington. So now we have all this congestion on both sides and stalemates, and nothing gets done. And this is Rome burning. This is grassroots. If we can't do this, which only two states have eliminated this problem.
You know, one of the issues right now for Ohio is that you really can only get around to doing much about it every 10 years they redistrict because of the census. And also when one party controls government, as it tends to, you know, for periods of time in Ohio off and on, it's unlikely that party, you know, that has control of the apportionment board is going to give that up. It was probably perhaps last year or the year before some of the best opportunities when the government was split. We had a Republican in the Secretary of State's office and a Democrat in the governor's office, and you could kind of, you know, maybe find some middle ground and start to make some changes. Without that, what do you think the odds are, Frank?
Well, then let's just give up, Ann.
Well, I'm just laying it out there, Frank.
I know. If it was an easy problem, that's why I'm looking for an advocate, and that's why if you could bring this up periodically and start by researching this article.
Okay.
June 28th, 2008, David S. Broder, which just explains it so good. And if two states have done it, I would think that would be a blueprint on how they got it done.
Check it out. Okay, great. Well, Frank, thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Take care. 614-292 and Kevin in Marengo in Morrow County. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, this is Kevin.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Ann. I am an alumni of Ohio State University.
Okay.
And for what it's worth, I was just coming in on 71 South, and at the Hudson exit off the 71, it says Ohio State University on the ODOT sign. And that's
Ooh.
The most popular exit to get to the campus.
That's an official directional sign, right? Is that what you're saying?
I just thought I'd let you know
starting
that.
Start a little rumble here on the air. Okay.
Sure. I don't know if ODOT's not with it or what. But,
okay.
Anyway.
Well, it's, you know,
show.
If they have to spend extra public funds on it, I would say absolutely not. But all right, Kevin.
Some of that football money.
Okay, Kevin. You and Blake are going to have to duke it out later, but thanks for that call.
Have a good one.
Take
Thank
care
you.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Mike in the Short North, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to talk about Senate Bill 5?
Indirectly, yes.
Okay.
I'm a retired teacher, and I have state teachers retirement system for my pension. I want to just describe briefly the idea about the difference between a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan. The defined benefit is where they say, in this case, if you teach 30 years, you'll get two-thirds of your salary in the form of a pension. Where defined contribution is that you put in X percent, we'll put in X percent, and in the end you get the lump sum, whether it goes up in the market, down in the market, bonds, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I want to argue that I think the defined benefit plan is better for everyone, including the taxpayers, who, of course, are paying government employee salaries, simply because when you have a defined benefit plan, you're spreading the risks. In other words, if I had to save out of pocket for my retirement, I'd have to save a lot more than I will probably need, because I might just be the one guy in 100 who lives to be 100 years old, and I don't want to outlive my money. I also might be the unfortunate guy who retires the very day the market drops like crazy, and I'm in trouble. If you have a whole pool of people, hundreds of thousands or whatever, you're spreading the risk. Yeah, this guy retired the day the market went down. These other people retired the day the market was up, and it all evens out. And you only need to save, on average, something like half as much money. Now, any employee, whether you're a teacher, whether you're working for the government, whether you're working for industry, business, whatever, everybody is going to demand, if you want to get qualified people, everybody's going to demand a certain amount of pay and benefits. And you can trade them off. You can say, we're going to give you lots of pay but no benefits, or moderate pay but benefits, some trade-off. But you've got to pay something. And because of that evening out of the risk, I think that's cheaper for everybody involved.
It seems as though that's not necessarily your point's well taken. It's interesting, and I appreciate the distinctions. But some people are saying, well, why should teachers get such a great deal? Why shouldn't they take a risk like everybody else, like the folks who are out there, taking the risks, for instance, with their 401k and having their retirement rest largely in the 401k?
I'm so glad you asked that question, Ann,
so.
Because exactly for that reason, because it is cheaper. Given that you've got to give some combination of pay and benefits, it's actually cheaper for the employer and it's cheaper for the employee. And what I want to know is, why isn't everybody demanding this instead of saying, hey, you guys have a relatively inexpensive system that works well. We want to take it away from you. I don't understand why employees we were beginning to take it for granted, even in corporations, you know, the blue chips or whatever, that you had a defined benefit pension. Why are we rolling over and playing dead and say, okay, we took it away from me, now let's take it away from everybody else? Why aren't we saying, wait a minute, there's enough money in this country to go around. Why aren't you giving that to even more and more and more employees instead of taking it away from the few who still have it? That doesn't make sense to me. It's like a divide and conquer strategy among industries and industry and government, I think.
Instead of lowering the bar, you're suggesting at least maintain it where it's at. It's just better for everybody.
maintain it where it's at and go back to giving it to people who work for blue chip companies and corporations.
Okay. All right, Mike. Thanks. Well, thanks. Take care. 614-292-8513. We have this just in. The eruption of the volcano is in Iceland. I think it was in Finland, but I didn't have that right in front of me. It was on Saturday. It is larger than last year's eruption that closed airspace in April 2010. But this year, it's unlikely to have a widespread effect. I think it's the way the winds are blowing or something. So that eruption of the volcano was in Iceland on Saturday, and it is larger than last year's, but unlikely to have the same effect. And Gino and Bexley, did that address your point?
Hello.
Hi, Gino.
Hello, Ann. Mm-hmm. Yes, the reason they have volcanoes in Iceland is there's a Teutonic plate.
Okay, tectonic plate?
Tectonic plate, mm-hmm, from North America and Western Iceland and Europe and Eastern Iceland, and it goes right through the middle.
Okay.
So they get a lot of volcanic activity.
All right. Well, thank you, and I'm sorry about that mistake I made.
Oh, that's okay.
Take care, Gino.
Okay.
Take care. Bye. Bye-bye. 614-292-8513 or email us. We're running out of time, though. Jerry and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a concern. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
I have a concern about the cuts in funding to the Consumer Council that Kasich's group is suggesting.
You're talking about the 51% cut to their budget?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I had a concern with IGS Energy some months back and really had trouble trying to come to grips with it. And I called PUCO, and they said call the Consumer Council. In other words, there was a runaround. And then I found out what I didn't know before, that the only regulated agency is the Columbia Gas. None of the others are regulated. They could just go off and do anything they want. And I read last night online that there's been some deceptive marketing practices that they feel IGS has done. This is the lawyer for the Consumer Council who said that. And I'm just very upset that this is following a trend where we the people just don't have a chance to voice our complaints.
Well, there's going to be there's the proposed cut that's pending in the budget, 51% cut. But there's also language that would gag the Ohio Consumers Council from protesting when in the natural gas, you know, in further deregulation of the natural gas industry in Ohio, which would affect the IGSs of the world. So that's two different things, actually.
Deregulated even more.
Well, it doesn't directly say it would deregulate it more, but it would say that the Ohio Consumers Council can't take a stand, can't advocate one way or the other in those cases.
So where do we have our voice? We the people, when we have complaints.
Well, the governor is saying that you can get that through the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio.
No, when I called, they said they didn't handle that. They didn't handle consumer complaints. I think this has to be looked into further.
Okay. Well, it's pending in the Ohio State budget. Jerry, thanks for the call and giving us, you know, bringing up that topic.
Thank you.
Take care. It's pending in the Ohio State budget. It's in the Senate now. It's supposed to be passed by the end of June. So it's, you know, jumping right along here. If you have a question or comment about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Chris in Clintonville, you're on the air. You're frustrated about the casino delays.
No, that's not quite. I just said I was going to speak to the casino delays.
All righty.
Actually, my concern is this. I believe that the city has a very difficult position here. Obviously, our community needs jobs, and that's why the referendum or that's why the people voted to allow the casinos in that constitutional amendment legislation mm-hmm. that was passed. The concern, though, is this. As I understand it from what I've seen in the news, the mayor and his people believe that they had a good faith agreement with the casino interests that that area out there on the west side would be annexed into the city of Columbus so that those workers would be paying city of Columbus taxes. And that quid pro quo, the city of Columbus would provide infrastructure in the way of water and sewer services and so forth. And at this point, then, as I understand it, you know, the mayor now has this real dilemma where, yes, our city needs jobs. However, the Penn National is backing out of the agreement to annex into the city of Columbus, and therefore their workers would not be paying city of Columbus income tax. And so the city has an investment in providing all that water and sewer service without collecting revenue beyond that or just the metered rate of water and sewer service.
Mm-hmm.
And so I support the mayor, and I'm not usually found to say that. But I do find,
let the record show.
Yeah, okay. But I do support the mayor, and that's because I believe he needs to hold the line. You know, I don't have a very high opinion of the casino industry. I believe that the desperation for jobs caused our citizens to kind of get in bed with the devil here. But, you know, without sounding like a religious freak, that's my concern, is that you know, that industry is predicated on some shady dealings that, you know, throughout the history of the industry. I'm not happy that we have casino gambling in Columbus, but if we're going to have it, we have to at least preserve the agreements that were made.
What do you think they're talking about, Chris, when the judge tells them to step aside for an hour and try to work out a possible settlement?
Well, that sounds to me like the judge is saying to Penn National, you know, you've made some agreements, or at least, you know, you've got enough revenue here to make this happen.
Okay.
And certainly, you know, that's certainly true of the gaming industry. There's enough revenue there to make this happen.
Okay.
Obviously, we're talking about millions and millions of dollars, but we're talking about a fraction, you know, 1% of employee wages is what we're talking about in terms of 1 or 2% going into city coffers, which is, you know, if they create several thousand jobs, that's a substantial amount of city revenue.
All right. We just have 1 minute left. Bob, Chris, thanks
for
your call. I appreciate it. And just time for one more. And Fred in Worthington, figure we might as well stay on the same topic. We just have about a minute, though, Fred. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Jane. I'm sorry. Anne.
That's
gee,
okay.
Where'd
I go by Jane. I'll go by Jane.
Could you refresh me? You mentioned something earlier on about the number of million of dollars that they were going to contract to research something about gambling.
Yes.
What was the exact use?
Well, I kind of rambled from 14 to 16 million, but I think it's about 14.
And that was to look into
ways to generate more revenue for the state from casinos.
Got it. What I want to do, whenever I hear a number in the middle of the million, teens and millions, mm-hmm. I equate it with another popular number that I heard, and that was how much money is spent, number one, on mowing the interstates, instead of us just quit mowing them, and also how much we would have to pay per year if we had high-speed rail. That's how much we would have to support.
Yeah, I think it was something like $17 million a year.
Yeah. And what I'm trying to do is just put it in perspective. Hmm. We're talking about researching gambling versus mowing the interstate versus supporting high-speed rail, and those numbers
are all in the same,
you know, sometimes
neighborhood.
Sometimes we say, oh, we don't want to spend $19 million to support this rail system, but we're willing to throw $13 million or whatever it is toward gambling research or mowing the lawn along the interstates. And it just seems, let's keep these things in perspective. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Interesting comparison. Thank you, Fred.
Thanks. Bye.
When we return, we will be talking to Guy Worley. He was chief of staff for Mayor Coleman, but he's now president and CEO of Columbus Downtown Development Corporation and Capital South Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation. Bring your questions about Columbus Commons. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and to me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon. On today's Fresh Air, Jimmy Fallon, the host of Late Night, tells us about his years with Saturday Night Live and getting to host his own talk show and about doing impressions. Join us for Fresh Air beginning at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And stay right here in 20 minutes. At 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins, and a Cuban American visits Cuba, and travel restrictions to Cuba have been eased. That discussion begins at 11 o'clock on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design. Creative futures begin in Saturday morning art classes for children and youth starting in June. Information and online registration at www.ccad.edu.
65 degrees in downtown Columbus. Showers and thunderstorms are likely off and on throughout the day. We could see a little bit of sunshine peeking through the clouds at times, a high of 83. Showers and thunderstorms tonight, a low of 64. More rain for Tuesday and a high of 77. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. From the rubble of the Columbus City Center Mall, a new beginning in Columbus Commons, which opens this week, or officially opens this week. Music programs, an outdoor reading room, gardens, a carousel, and more is in store. Joining us to talk about it is President and CEO of Columbus Downtown Development Corporation and Capital South Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation, Guy Worley. Guy, as I mentioned earlier, served as chief of staff for Mayor Coleman. He's been serving in his current position since January 2007. So, Guy, welcome to the program.
Hello, Ann. How are you today?
Very well, thanks. Do we want to do a weather report for the week?
I'm predicting it's going to clear up and be very sunny starting Thursday through the whole opening weekend.
You might just luck out on that score. Might be a little brisker, but a little less wet. The concept of an open green space with many gardens isn't a new concept. They have them in Paris and in New York. What about Columbus Commons will be unique to Columbus?
Well, basically what will be unique to Columbus is we'll have a new urban green space in the heart of downtown. You know, our downtown is 2.2 square miles. It's a very large downtown. You could actually fit the city of Boston and Cleveland's downtown in our downtown. But we don't have a lot of green space in our urban core. We have the Topiary Park, which is a jewel for our city as well, but right in the downtown core next to the State House, we don't have a lot of green space, and so this is going to add a lot of value to not only our downtown, but really to the region, because we are going to program it and have programming for, frankly, everyone in our region. So it's going to be one of two new jewels that we'll be adding online this summer.
The other one being the Scioto Mile?
The Scioto Mile will be opening on July 7th of this year as well. So these two new urban green spaces will basically be cornerstones of a new district that a lot of folks may not be familiar with, and that is the new River South District. And to the west, you've got the Scioto Mile that will open on July 7th. To the east is the new Columbus Commons Park. On the north anchor, if folks recall shopping in the day at Lazarus, it was an abandoned building. It's now a redeveloped, fully occupied building. And then to the south in that district, the cornerstone would be the new Franklin County Courthouse.
Well, let me ask you, a lot of folks, when this was first announced, was it just a couple years ago?
About 2.5 years ago, February of 2009.
They complained and they were worried it was just going to be another site for crime and vandalism and that sort of thing. How do you protect the green space until it's further developed around its perimeter, which is, I guess, the ultimate goal?
Well, one way is to program the park and have something for everyone. Because if there are activities there on a daily basis, that in itself, in many ways, will make it safe. But we have designed this park with safety in mind because we went out and we researched great urban parks, frankly, in this country and around the world. And there are several key themes that emerge in each urban park. One, you've got to have them programmed. It's critical. And our programming for this park really will have something for everyone. On Thursdays, we're focusing on young professionals. On Fridays, it's commons for kids, for younger folks. And then in the evenings, the after work crowd will occupy Columbus Commons. And then like this Saturday, it's an all-day family day. We're opening a new Columbus Commons outdoor reading room. Mm-hmm. There's going to be OSU pep band there, Arnett Howard, children's theater, movies in the park. We're showing Raiders of the Lost Ark. We're going to have fireworks Saturday night. And then on Sunday, we are going to basically open our world-class Columbus Commons Gardens, which we partnered with Franklin Park Conservatory. And there's going to be tea in the gardens. And then it's a garden theme for the day, if you will, because that evening there'll be Shadowbox is going to perform there back to the garden concert.
Right.
And so food is important, and we learned as another theme. So programming being first, food being second. We're going to have plenty of food in the parks. We've got a new restaurateur, Burgers, Dogs, and Fries, a local entrepreneur who has several restaurants in the city, opened on Friday. Had a lot of folks out there. The sun came out on Friday, and lunch crowd was doing very well.
When we talk about developing the perimeter, are you still interested in restaurants, shops, housing, that kind of thing all the way around it?
Correct.
What are your expectations for the pace of that development?
Well, our intentions were to build phase one and to have it open this year. So it'll be opening on May 26th, this Thursday. Phase two would be residential housing along the perimeter on High Street. And so we have three sites that face High Street, and we've basically done a development plan for the site with seven stories of residential above one story of retail. Because we're trying to reinvigorate High Street, mm-hmm. and you need to have retail on both sides of the street. As you're probably aware, we own the Lazarus building now, and we've got new retailers that are moving in on that side of the street. When we talk to retailers, they feel it's important to have retail on both sides of the street. So controlling that site and programming it so that there'll be retail on the street level is critical to the success and long-term viability of it. But by having that programming phase first in the park, that helps retail as well, because retailers need folks that will be here in the evenings and on weekends. And so it's an entire plan. And those of you who remember going to Macy's over at the corner of 3rd and Rich, mm-hmm. we're reserving that site as an office site. So in many ways, this development plan mirrors the plan that was put together about 15 years ago for the Arena District, a mixed-use plan with residential, retail, and entertainment and housing. And so in many ways, this plan will mirror that. And that plan to implement that was implemented at the Arena District has taken about 15 years to see it all come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
We're expecting this to be somewhere between 5 and 10 years.
We have from Sharon on Facebook writes, "We walked around the area this weekend and it's beautiful and so well done. I hope that it sparks similar green spaces downtown and throughout the city. These are the things that keep a city vibrant." My guest is Guy Worley. He's president and CEO of Columbus Downtown Development Corporation and Capital South Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation. We're talking about today Columbus Commons. It's opening up. Grand opening is on Thursday. And also this Scioto Mile is kind of connected to that development. If you have a question or comment for Guy, we welcome them, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Guy, Columbus Commons abuts the back, I guess it's kind of the backyard of the Ohio Theater. I can't remember the name of the building on the corner of High and State.
Fifth Third Building.
The Fifth Third Building, and then also the Hyatt on Capitol Square.
Correct.
What are those entities doing to, and then, of course, that little mall in between Capitol Square and
the
theater. The Esplanade. What are they doing to kind of connect with that backyard now, or anything?
Well, actually, they've been very good partners. the entire neighborhood is putting its best foot forward and making their buildings look very nice. The owners of the Fifth Third building are actually going to build a new facade on the back of their building, which faces Columbus Commons. And they're also going to build a new entrance into Columbus Commons, bringing retail, probably restaurants, right to the south face of their building, which will front Columbus Commons. Kappa has repainted their building, and it looks just great. The Hyatt has been a very good partner as well. The 175 South 3rd Street building, recently purchased, they are doing a great job adding landscaping to their building. So everyone in the neighborhood is putting their best foot forward to beautify the whole thing. And you just have to remember, like 2.5 years ago, this is a 1.2 million square foot abandoned empty mall that basically was a bunker. There were no windows. It didn't face the street. And so we think that this urban green space will be a catalyst for redevelopment for this entire area, as it has green space and urban parks have been in other cities around the world.
Tom in Circleville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. I think it's a great thing that what you're trying to do, but I just keep thinking back to the Columbus City Center that used to be there. I went there one time with my family, and that was the last time I went, because even though they had security there, the place was overrun by gangs. And, you know, I just want to know what you're really going to do to control that, even though I know it's open for everyone, but how are you going to control the gangs like what you had at the Civic Center, at the Columbus Civic
City Center. Mm-hmm.
City Center.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's...
How are you going to control those groups of people? That really, you know, I would love to come, but I'm afraid for my family.
Guy?
That's a very good question, and one that we get asked constantly.
So how do you do that?
We have designed the park in mind for security. We also have security in the park. And so there will be security, 24/7 security in the park. In addition to that, when we've studied other urban city parks, security is always front and center. And with that, the park has been designed with sight lines so that it'd be very difficult to hide behind something. And therefore, from a just pure design perspective, we have designed it with safety in mind. But we also recognize that there needs to be security there. And so the park has actually been open since December. And thousands of folks actually walk through the park on a daily basis because it is right downtown. With our security presence there, we've had virtually no problems since December with it opening. Now, we're going to have added security there for the events that will be occurring this weekend and through the weekends throughout the summer. But in addition to the security, the programming and having folks there and the kind of family programming that we're promoting, we think basically it helps keep the bad element away. And so there's going to be no tolerance for any negative behavior there. We have a very good, close relationship with the Columbus Police Department. They are going to have plenty of police presence in the park. But additionally, we have our own security in the park as well. So that is a question that we get asked a lot, and that is a common theme of other urban parks as well. And it's something that you really have to pay attention to, and we are very much focused on it.
When you're talking about developing the perimeter, will the retail be facing out and inside the park?
No, it'll basically be focusing toward High Street.
Okay.
And what we've designed is about 300 apartments because rental is very strong downtown right now.
Right.
For sale is flat as it is pretty much everywhere nationally.
Right.
But rental, there's a huge demand for it, and so the best views in that rental property will face that new park. And there will always be a six-acre park there. Even when it's fully developed out, 6 acres of the 9 in the site will be park. And so the retail will basically face High Street.
Guy, we had a caller who asked who is the we that owns Lazarus Building, and I thought, you know, for the next the rest of the show, we only have about a minute and a half left, you could explain, you know, what the Columbus Downtown Development Corporation and the Capital South Community Urban Redevelopment Corporation do.
Sure. Basically, CDDC, that's the acronym because these are very long names,
well,
and
nice.
Capital South are both economic development nonprofits. We're focused on redevelopment of downtown. And so CDDC owns the Lazarus Building. Capital South owns the Columbus Commons site. So it's two entities focused on urban redevelopment and leading city-changing projects. And so we were tasked with building the Columbus Commons, a mixed-use development project, and we're tasked with redeveloping the Lazarus Building, and we're tasked with the redevelopment of the riverfront by building the Sahara Mile Park. And so that's basically what we do. And we've been able to achieve these projects because of the public-private partnerships that we're able to bring to the table. A lot of the corporate community have invested significantly in the development of these projects, as have the public sector. And so our role is to bring public and private partnerships to bear and to get projects done. These projects were part of a 2002 downtown master plan that was adopted by the city after a huge community-wide process on what should be next for downtown. Those projects in that plan are basically coming to fruition. July 7th, with the opening of the Sahara Mile, will pretty much be done. So last year, we started a new effort. What should we do over the next 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
And so we had that community-wide process last year and put together a 2010 plan of about 10 projects we should focus on in the next decade.
Including Columbus Commons and Sahara
Mile. Going next.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Guy Worley, President and CEO of the CDDC and the Capital South, thanks for joining us today.
And thank you for your time.
Good luck this week.
Thank you.
Yep.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.